Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, designing custom decks for outdoor relaxation and entertaining. Details at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Missouri is no small state. By land area, it's the 18th largest in the country. And according to a 2022 U.S. Census Bureau study, Missouri had a total of 1,226 cities, towns, and villages. Only three of those are its biggest cities. So there's a heck of a lot more to the state than Kansas City, St. Louis, and Springfield. Caitlin Yeager knows this well, and she's written a book that highlights 50 places perfect for day-long jaunts, weekend getaways, and extended trips. It's titled Small Town Missouri: Legends, Lore, and Attractions in the Show Me State, and she joins us now to talk about it. Caitlin, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much, Elaine.
And we want to invite you to this conversation, too. Is there a small Missouri town you love to visit? What makes it special? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send an email to us at talk@stlpr.org. So, Caitlin, this book, was it your idea?
So admittedly, not entirely. So if people in the St. Louis area are familiar with Reedy Press, they do a lot of really great, I like to say, place-based books, history, tourism, those kinds of things. And I knew them through my day job, my current job. And they had reached out, knowing the work that I've done with small towns, and said, hey, we really like this idea of starting a series about small towns. And with them being a Missouri publisher, they wanted to start with Missouri. So they actually initially asked me if I knew anybody who could write the book. And I really kind of took a leap of faith and put my name out there. And I said, you know, I've been doing this for a little bit. I've been telling these small town stories for a while now. And I kind of threw my hat in the ring. And I said, would you even consider, you know, me? And they thought it was a great idea. They liked the work that I've done with Missouri Humanities and Small Town Showcase. So they put a lot of faith in me and had quite a bit of an idea of what they wanted, but it is the first in what they're hoping to be a series. So I was definitely a bit of a guinea pig with the topic.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that this is a travel guide or something different?
It's interesting because I think, you know, you could really use it as, you know, you could keep this in your car and, you know, just kind of pick it up and on the weekends and think, you know, hey, where can I go that's within a couple hours and spend some time? What could I do there? But I really think this is a book that you could sit down and just read and really learn some fun facts and a lot of really great history and people and stories. So I forget who I was interviewing with at one point, but they called it a bookazine.
So it's bookazine.
Kind of like this combination of like a magazine that you might be able to just flip through, but also a book that you can really sit down and read and feel like you're engaged in a narrative.
Mm-hmm. And actually, now that you mention it, it reminds me of some of those special issues of like Time Life.
Yeah, books. The kind of thicker versions. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So all those places that you had visited, did you keep notes on them? I mean, did you have to go through, you know, different communications that you had? Or, I mean, what was the process?
It was daunting. So obviously, you know, you mentioned over 1,000 different towns, cities, villages in the state of Missouri, and they wanted it narrowed down to which 50 do you think we should feature? So it's no small task. So what really kind of started the research process was them being Reedy Press, giving me, you know, a population cutoff. Like, let's consider communities with a population of fewer than 25,000 people. So that gave me a starting point. And really from there, it was looking up which towns in Missouri had 25,000 people or fewer, and figuring out what stories were within those communities that not only, I think part of it was, what would people expect to see in this book? You know, there's towns in here that are very much expected, places like Herman and Hannibal that already get quite a bit of tourist industry, get a lot of attention for the stories that are within those communities. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to make sure that there were stories in here from communities that people really might not have heard of or even given a second thought to. You know, those signs on the highway that say, if you pull off here, you'll go to this town. And how many of us ignore them when we're driving down 44 or 70? But, you know, the research was really figuring out which towns would fit in the population demographic we were looking for. And then kind of, you know, if you look at the book, it's broken down kind of by bullet points. Mm-hmm. And really just doing a lot of research as to, you know, where I could fill that in and ultimately what could fill the pages of this book. And I say that this is non-exhaustive. There are so many more towns that are very much worthy. And I actually use the opportunity in several of these little sections to say, oh, well, while you're here, hop over a couple miles and go to this town, mm-hmm. you know, because you're in the area. Maybe it didn't get a full feature, but it's something that deserves a visit, too. So it was just a lot of historical society research, a lot of archives research, a lot of work with chambers of commerce, and just really a lot of digging, because they're small towns. Not a lot of them have the big repositories that you might, you know, to do a city of St. Louis, you know, it'd be really easy to find the research. But some of these were very small and don't have a lot on them. So it took a lot of digging.
Mm-hmm. Was there a place that you knew you wanted to include as you started the process of writing?
Oh, gosh, several. So I knew, like I mentioned, Hannibal and Herman. I knew those were going to be included. Places like Kimmswick that's, you know, you might not even consider, you know, they're so close to St. Louis. But, you know, Kimmswick, if you've been there, it's only about 30 minutes south of St. Louis. But, you know, it's such a quintessential small town. And it's beautiful. And it's kind of, it doesn't have the urban sprawl that some of the other communities that maybe north of St. Louis might have. Or like in St. Charles County, you get a little bit of that urban sprawl. When you go down south, you know, you think about places like Pacific, Missouri, places like Kimmswick, they're very close to these urban areas, but they really have retained a lot of that small town charm. And then you go across the state and there's places like Arrow Rock that's so historically significant, but it's so small. 59 people in the town of Arrow Rock.
59.
It's the smallest town in the book. It's also the first town in the book. So I think it's a great feature that right off the bat, smallest town that's featured in the book is the first one. Mm-hmm. And then places like, you know, Excelsior Springs that have a lot of historical significance, but really interesting history, you know, with it being, you know, one of those turn of the century spa towns that people really went after, but it's not exactly that anymore. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot that I knew I wanted to include. And then I think it was also figuring out, you know, where are the pieces of Missouri where I wanted to make sure we had representation too. I didn't want it to be so concentrated to one area. I wanted there to be good geographic representation.
So this show has been a great way for me to get familiar with some of the places that are included in your book. You mentioned Pacific, mm-hmm. and I came to know about Pacific because I was interested in monster trucks.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But then there's also something about Pacific that makes it unique insofar as the environment and what you talked about with urban sprawl. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, Pacific, I talk about quite a lot, mostly because, you know, it is such a great place if you really want that small town energy and atmosphere, but you want to have your access to bigger city amenities. You know, people who, are, of course, are familiar with St. Louis area, Pacific is really just about 25 minutes from downtown St. Louis on Highway 44. And you think about any other direction from St. Louis, 25 minutes away is... So you're still kind of in St. Louis.
Right,
you know, we
right.
joke that if you're in St. Louis, it takes 20 minutes to get anywhere.
Okay.
But you're in Pacific in 25 to 30 minutes from St. Louis. And it really has been kind of saved in a way from getting that kind of St. Louis urban sprawl because of what's around it. You look at what's around Pacific and you've got the Merrimack River. You've got Shaw Nature Reserve. You've got some state parks, like the state parks that are down there along Highway 44 and the conservation areas, they've really kind of provided this buffer so that once you finally get through there and into Pacific, it's this kind of, you know, sectioned off little area that really has retained its small town downtown square and, you know, Main Street districts, the restaurants, the stores. But in reality, it's, you know, it's seen a lot of traffic. You know, it's on Route 66. So a lot of people still traverse through it because of the Route 66 tourism industry. You've got railroad history. You've got the river history with the Merrimack River. So it's a town that has a lot of significance and a lot of really important pieces of history. And it's very close to urban areas, but it's kind of its own little oasis of a small town, but within the kind of bigger city amenities. So it's kind of that perfect balance if you're mm-hmm. looking for that. Yeah, it's a great little town.
Was there a place that was recommended to you by someone and then you had the opportunity to either visit yourself or to talk with folks there?
Oh, gosh. I will say that I knew a lot of the communities that were probably going to make it mostly because of my day job. You know, I work with a lot of small communities with Missouri Humanities. I think ones that I probably wouldn't have done on my own without, you know, really talking to some other people would have been, you know, places like the town of Carl Junction, which is, you know, it's different from a lot of the communities in that it doesn't really have a major tourist attraction in there. It's near Joplin. It's just a really, it's a place that I worked with my job. And I just thought there was something about this community, the community spirit. It's so beautiful down there. They've got a lot of really great stories that, you know, could you spend a week there? I mean, you might not have a ton of like attractions to visit and all that, but you could certainly, you know, if you're headed down to southwestern Missouri, it's worth a stop just to see how pretty the community is and check out some of their events. What I loved about Carl Junction was it was a community where, like, if they wanted to get something done, like, the community got it done. It was, like, their library was fully, like, raised by volunteer donors. They have an all-inclusive playground that's huge on the school's property that, again, was all donor-funded. You know, they're just a community that rallies together and, you know, puts each other first and puts the community first. And I really liked that energy.
Mm-hmm. We talked about population and that being one of the ways you decided or narrowed down the range of your selection. Of those really small places, or if we compare, that is, the really small ones to the biggest ones in the book, what are they? You mentioned Arrow Rock.
Yes.
Arrow Rock. And then the biggest one, are they actually more similar than they are different?
I love that you bring that up, because something that I love about this book is that if you look at the layout, the beginning of every town's feature, there's a circle that has the population on there. So it's almost like a dare. It's like, I dare you to judge what this community has based on the population, right? So you look at Arrow Rock, first town in the book, 59 people. I believe the biggest town is Sedalia. I think it's about 21,000. And what I loved was I really kind of struggled to find communities that were over like 10 to 15,000 people. There were a lot more under that threshold than there were, you know, like, you know, over 10 to 15,000. And what I think that tells me is, you know, especially when you look at, I mean, even comparing the biggest town with the smallest town, like, sure, Sedalia has the Missouri State Fair. It's this huge draw. It's got a great, beautiful main street. But Arrow Rock is the home of George Caleb Bingham. Arrow Rock is the home of the Arrow Rock Lyceum Theater, which puts on high-quality theater productions that are renowned. They are, the whole town is a national historic site. And, you know, one story I love about Arrow Rock is that even though the population is 59 people, there is so much passion and interest in preserving that community that the Arrow Rock Preservation Society has over 800 members, but only 59 people live in the town, So I think, you know, when you compare, you know, it kind of just, the hypothesis is don't judge a book by its cover. Like, you know, you can't say that just because Arrow Rock has 59 people and Sedalia has 21,000 that they're all that different. You know, kind of like you said, that I think either one is equally as worthy of a trip and of exploring. And I think it's also what you make of it. Everybody's interests are different. And, you know, one town might not be as interesting to another person. But, you know, I think the purpose of this book is to show that no matter how many people actually live in the community, you know, you might find a book or a town in this book of 15,000 people, but the town of 2,000 people might actually have more, you know, museums or hotels or restaurants. You know, it's just it's not about the number.
Mm-hmm. So challenging assumptions is
kind
of one of the things that you want to do here.
Absolutely.
Something that I've wondered about since I, even before I moved to St. Louis in 2014, on one of the flights that I took between here and Los Angeles, I met someone who was from Arnold. I had no idea, you know, where Arnold was. And another passenger on another flight had been from Cuba. And so something that I've wondered about is, why is it that there are these small towns in Missouri that share a name with, like, U.S. states or foreign countries? Is that something that you know?
A few of them I know the story. So, you know, you think of some good examples. You mentioned Cuba. Another one is a good example is Mexico, Missouri.
Yes.
So a lot of the naming after another place had to do kind of with what was going on in the world at the time. So Mexico, for example, was founded around the time where there was the war for Mexican independence. And so that was kind of en vogue, you know, to talk about. So that was a big reason for the naming of towns, you know, kind of in reference to other towns. And there's many that didn't make the book that are, you know, I think of, you know, Versailles, Missouri. Is that, I mean, it's Versailles is what we think of, but we say Versailles. Milan, which is spelled like Milan, but Milan, Missouri, Paris, Missouri. You know, there are a lot of communities that are named for other places, whether it's for, again, maybe something that was going on in the world at the time, or, you know, because of admiration or aspiration. You know, mm-hmm. I think it kind of, there's a lot of different reasons.
Yeah. We're going to take a very quick break here. When we come back, we'll pick up this conversation about visit-worthy small towns in Missouri with author Caitlin Yeager. We also want to hear from you. Are you already a small-town Missouri aficionado? Is there a small Missouri town that you've visited that's got a special place in your memories? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. Don't go far. We'll be right back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Para Corporation, a general contractor seeking professionals who want to make a difference in the community. More at parac.com/careers.
Welcome back. I'm Eileen Cha. Have you been to a small Missouri town on a day trip or longer stay this summer? Or do you have a niche interest you'd love to enjoy or explore in a small town? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. So, Caitlin, the thing about niche interests, I am wondering about the spots in your book that have haunted places. Tell us a little bit about where people with that niche interest can find something to enjoy.
Well, if I'm being perfectly honest, I think you could probably Google any town in this book and write haunted after, and there's probably something. Okay. I mean, if I had to pick anything that was kind of like a common theme, is that, you know, that's something that people really kind of look for. It is a niche little market. People love the haunted stories. So, you know, I think most, if not all of these communities, at some point I came across them saying like, oh, what part of this town is haunted? But yeah. One story that sticks out, and this is because this was my college town, and this was like an urban legend in Kirksville, Missouri. Mm-hmm. I went to Truman State University, and there is this urban legend about this cemetery. I'm going to flip to the page so I can name the cemetery correctly. But where if you went to, okay, so here it is, the Devil's Chair in Highland Park Cemetery. Okay. There is, and it is kind of weird, you know, I mean, all of, you know, anybody can make up a story that kind of spooks people and all that, but there is this very odd headstone in Highland Park Cemetery in Kirksville, Missouri, that is shaped like a chair. It's a concrete, like, looks kind of upholstered, ornate chair, and it's a headstone. So automatically, that's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. But of course, there's a story that if a person sits on the chair at midnight on Halloween night, that a hand will come up from the ground and pull you down to the depths of hell. You know, so I can't confirm whether that has happened, but, you know, it is a fun story to spook the college kids that are, you know, coming from all over and say, oh, there's this haunted cemetery and there's this haunted headstone. So, you know, we joked about, you know, going to visit it and whatnot, but, you know, I have no real, you know, experience being dragged to the depths of hell.
Yeah, I'm glad. Neosho was also one of the places, I think, that had some of that lore. And Salem, too, which I just saw you page past.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that people are interested, like, in all through the year? Is it seasonal?
I mean, of course, you know, people get excited about this during Halloween. You know, it's kind of the perfect setting. It's, you know, it gets dark sooner. It's chilly. It's obviously it's Halloween, All Hallows Eve. But there really is, you know, there are a lot of people out there that do seek this out year round. There's, you mentioned Neosho. That's an interesting story that has really deep roots. So there's this legend of the Hornet Spook Light, which is this light phenomenon first seen in 1903 but has been witnessed by people for generations. And there's tons of local stories about why this light phenomenon has happened. Some say it's the ghost of a murdered Osage chief or a Quapaw woman who tragically died after her warrior was killed in battle. Some people, of course, say it's a practical explanation, like a headlight, which, I mean, that doesn't seem that practical. I think if it was a headlight, you would know. But, you know, it's still something that has kind of been this urban legend that's been important to the community's story for over 100 years. And people really enjoy kind of having that little angle to put for their town. You know, it's something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have Glenda, who is calling from St. Charles. Glenda, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
I'm an amateur geologist rock hound, and if you've got like little boys that like rocks or anybody that's interested in volcanics, Missouri has a lot of volcanic deposits that are at the surface that you could actually pick up. They're not part of a park where you're restricted, but if you go 2 hours on 60, south on 67, and then you go west on 72, as you're heading towards Ironton, Pilot Knob, the Elephant Rocks area, that whole stretch of 72 cuts through gigantic volcanic deposits that have been beautifully cut, and you could see, actually see where there's a dike running through them that just have drilled holes out through there. Mm-hmm. So you could take a rock hammer, or I use a screwdriver, and you could, you know, like just pry pieces off here and there if you're interested in that kind of thing. And it's the roadside there, it's very broad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's safe to go on. Your kids won't get hit by a car or anything. And the whole area is like a big pullout.
Yeah.
But it's really gorgeous. And then if you've got little boys who like their motor race truck, you know, you can go to Elephant Rock State Park, which is right at the end of 72 there. And this is one of the few parks where the kids can climb on the rock. And I've seen little boys there at Elephant Rock having the best time running their motorized trucks and cars all over these giant boulders. It's really fun for kids.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Glenda. And I think that gets to a point that these road trips are ones that we often take with children and mm-hmm. family, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you bring up the rocks, because especially in that area of Missouri, I will say, Glenda, that's one of my favorite places to explore with my kids. Often if we're going to a state park, we're heading down to southeastern Missouri just because, you know, there's so many beautiful geographical formations. There's so many rivers, beautiful rocks. You know, my husband and I love to, you know, plop our kids in a creek while they play, and we will literally just fish through the rocks and look for interesting pieces. So that part of Missouri really is a great place for road trips with kids who like to spend time outdoors.
Mm-hmm. We also have David calling from St. Louis. David, welcome.
Hey, thank you. What a great topic.
Go ahead, David. Thank you.
Yeah, so I don't know if you've covered this or if it's in the book, but Rocheport, Missouri is an excellent little town. It's one of those places that's just off the Katy Trail, so if you don't want to drive it, you can bike it from any number of locations. It has a schoolhouse that they've transformed into a little hotel, bed and breakfast, and they have little shops and places to go and a wonderful winery that overlooks the Missouri Bluffs.
How is it that you came to know about Rocheport, David?
I used to live in Columbia, and it's about 15 minutes west of Columbia, right along the Missouri River.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of those day trips that people go on, taking their bikes outside of Columbia onto the trail and into Rocheport for an afternoon of beautiful wine and food.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, David. And actually, Rocheport is in the book.
It is in the book, and it is one of the smaller towns. There's only about 200 people in Rocheport. And you mentioned the Katy Trail. That is one of the great attractions through Missouri, and so many of these communities connect to it. But Rocheport, I love that you bring it up. It is a beautiful community. And something about Rocheport that's really interesting, it's got the only tunnel on the Katy Railroad still in existence. It's not only one of the most photographed places along the Katy Trail, but it was featured, if you're a film buff, it was featured in the Stephen King film, Sometimes sometimes they come back. So yes, Rocheport is a beautiful community, and yes, the winery overlooking the Missouri River on the bluffs is truly spectacular. So definitely recommend Rocheport.
Yeah, Caitlin, your day job as a program director at the Missouri Humanities Council gives you this close and personal experience of being in small town communities. And you make your home here in the St. Louis region, in South St. Louis County. Do you see and feel the influences of Missouri's small towns in its biggest cities, you know, Kansas City, Springfield, and then here in St. Louis?
I do. I think, you know, something I like to make sure people understand is that, you know, we don't just, you know, the cities don't just need the small towns for, you know, their wineries and their, you know, their recreation, that so much of our economy comes from these small communities. You think about agriculture, you think about manufacturing, and, you know, obviously small towns utilize places like Kansas City and St. Louis for things like, you know, major league sports and restaurants and major museums. It's this give and take relationship, this push and pull that is so important to the overall, not just cultural heritage of the state, but the economy of the state, the relationships between the people. And I think, you know, that's one big goal of this book, is really to humanize small town Missouri, small town America in general, and show that you really can't judge rural America just by it being rural, that there are so many stories that are interwoven in these communities, and there's so many different people that have roots here. And a lot of the stories that you find in these small communities in this book have, you know, connections to Missouri history, to national history, even international history. So, you know, I think there's a lot to learn from one another. I want this book to help bridge the divide we often see between urban and rural communities, and to really show that, no, we do need each other. We all have stories that are worth sharing, and we all need to respect that. You know, also, I hear countless stories of people from bigger cities transplanting to small towns because they prefer that lifestyle, but also the reverse. You know, people from small towns that end up in the bigger cities for jobs for their loved ones. My own husband is from Mexico, Missouri. We talked about Mexico earlier. And he moved to St. Louis because that's where I was from, and that's where he ultimately decided that, you know, we were going to raise our family and, you know, create our life together. So, you know, but that keeps us connected to small town Missouri. So I think, you know, it's all about, you know, respecting each other's stories and humanizing each other's places, and, you know, just really having that connection between people and place.
One of the things that I did wonder, and having lived in other states myself, that there are places where not everyone has historically been welcome. Mm-hmm. You know, sundown towns really came to mind for me. Was that a consideration as you were making your selections for the towns that you would spotlight in this book?
Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting topic that it has come up, you know, in my research. And something that I think is really important to remember about sundown towns is, you know, there's a lot of communities that could choose to ignore it, you know. And I think we see that sometimes. We see communities that would rather cover that up and move on. Mm-hmm. But what we do see is a lot of communities that are not afraid to say, hey, this was a darker time in our history, and we really do want to get past that and show that we are very welcoming, and we want you to come discover our stories too.
Mm-hmm. And we have Jessica on the line from St. Louis who has something to share along those lines.
Great.
Jessica, welcome.
Hi, this is Jessica. I'm from St. Louis, and I work in a lot of small towns as a field service engineer, and I wondered about the presence of African Americans in those small towns, just on the lines which you're talking about. I wondered also, I'm observing also too, that a lot of small towns, they'll have a other side of the track area or a seedy part of town, and a lot of times the African Americans are living there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's almost just like glorified slave quarters, the conditions. So I wanted to know if you could comment on that.
Yes, Thank you, Jessica. And very quickly.
Yeah, I appreciate your comment. And I think, you know, it has to do a lot with the history of our state, too. You know, there's a lot of room for us to learn from the parts of our history that are not so pleasant. And I think that, you know, I applaud the communities that are really pushing for unlocking that history and sharing it and moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And it's great to have some of those included in the book, too. Caitlin Yeager is the author of Small Town Missouri, Legends, Lore, and Attractions in the Show Me State. Caitlin, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
This episode was produced by Elaine Shaw.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.